CSRD. Ännu en förkortning som väcker känslor hos företagare. Men lugn, våra rådgivare här på PWC har koll på det som din verksamhet berörs av. Från hållbarhetslösningar och nya regelverk till affärsutveckling och ansvarsfulla AI-strategier. Välkommen till PWC.
Välkommen till Unionen.
Jo, jag undrar hur många semesterdagar jag har som projektanställd. Och vad gör jag om jag inte får något semestertillägg? Påverkar det inkomstförsäkringen? För jag har blivit varslad, till skillnad från min kollega som ofta kör härskarteknik på möten och dessutom har högre lön trots samma tjänst. Vad gör jag nu?
Okej, vi tar det från början.
Jobbigt på jobbet. Som medlem i Unionen kan du alltid prata med våra rådgivare.
Upptäck hyllade Xpeng G9 och P7 hos Bilia. Våra produktspecialister hjälper dig att hitta rätt modell för just dig. Boka din provkörning på bilia.se/xpeng redan idag. Välkommen till Bilia, din specialist på Xpeng.
Sverige var länge ett föregångsland runt om i världen. Inte bara i våra egna ögon var vi ett avundsvärt exempel på ett riktigt gott samhälle. På områden som jämlikhet, trygghet och välfärd har vi tjänat som inspiration för många länder. Numera hör vi allt mer sällan Sverige beskrivas på det sättet. Istället är det spektakulära problem som får uppmärksamhet. Gängkriminaliteten med sina dödsskjutningar och sprängningar. Den stora migrationen och därpå följande segregationen. Och ett skolsystem som släppt in marknadskrafterna på ett sätt som saknar motstycke på andra håll. Så om Sverige idag tjänar mer som ett avskräckande exempel än ett föregångsland, är det kanske dags för oss att mer än tidigare blicka ut över världen för att hitta länder som lyckats bättre än vi på områden där vi har problem. Det här avsnittet handlar om integrationen. Ett område där vi länge sagt att vi behöver förbättra oss, men där resultaten i stort sett uteblivit. Den belgiska staden Mechelen drogs under slutet av 1900-talet med liknande problem som många svenska städer har idag. En stor migration som i invånarnas ögon mest tycktes leda till negativa konsekvenser, vilket i sin tur medförde främlingsfientlighet och extremism. När den liberale politikern Bart Sommers tillträdde som borgmästare bestämde han sig för att förändra stan, och av allt att döma har han lyckats bättre än de flesta. Snart ska du få höra vad han gjorde, men den första frågan han svarar på är vad han känner till om Sveriges situation.
I don't follow it very close by. Of course, I know you have a new government, minority government, if I'm correct, supported by a political party that is described as extreme right. And I know that you had issues concerning gang violence, a strong influx of people from, I think, Afghanistan, if I'm right, and also from East Africa. And that a city like Malmö, for example, is struggling with it, trying to find solutions. That I know, but of course I don't follow it every moment. I visited your country this summertime because I was on holidays there in the south. But then I saw Malmö. I was impressed by the city, in fact, certainly by the tower of Calatrava. I was a little bit jealous on it, but for the rest, no, I follow it not in very, very, let's say, very close by. But of course, I follow the big lines of it.
I think you seem rather well informed. Like you said, recently we had an election in Sweden. Almost every party lost mandates. The only clear winner was the party you mentioned, the Sweden Democrats. Mm. What are your experience from dealing with parties like that in this issue specifically?
Yeah, that's a complex question. So maybe I can compare it with the situation I was in at the end of the 90s in my city, Mechelen, where the extreme right political party Vlaams Belang, at that time still Vlaams Blok, had another name. They had to change their name by law because they were convicted for extremist ideas. So that political party was the biggest in my city, and it had a lot to do with. I think with two things. First of all, the rapid change of the city, a very strong influx of migration. And when I was a young guy, Mechelen was a monocultural city. Let's say in 2-3 decades, it became super diverse. And that went very fast. And local politics and also national politics had no real answer to how do we cope with it. And it created, of course, problems, social problems, problems of cohabitation, cultural challenges, problems of insecurity, feelings of insecurity, feelings of loss. And if you have a very good organized extreme right political party, they use that feeling to make it deeper and try to change fear or not feeling well and a feeling of decline. They use it as a weapon to create hate, polarization, and you see that at the moment of rapid change. And you also see it at the moment that people have the feeling that their government hasn't have control over the situation anymore. For example, if insecurity grows, if you walk on the street and you see broken windows, graffiti everywhere, gangs, youngsters hanging around, but verbally aggressive, intimidating behavior, then you say, why is this my society? That's the moment that you feel that the government has no control anymore, or at the moment that you have, of course, a very big refugee influx. We see it at the moment, for example, in Belgium, that we have a very strong influx of refugees, that government can't find a place to put them, that they have to sleep on the streets with kids, that in a railway station, you can't enter Brussels, you see people lying there, people you don't know, of course, dirt, and so on. So that creates, of course, a feeling of losing control. And then people, I'm not saying panicking, but people are getting very disturbed. And then you open a window, of course, for extreme right political parties to act. Because if you live let's take insecurity, if you have the feeling my city is not secure anymore, there's too much violence, too much burglary, too much things going wrong, you get angry. And three things happen. You're angry on the politicians because they don't do their job. I voted for them to take care of me. They don't take care of me. So those guys in City Hall don't trust them anymore. And you are looking for alternatives. And the alternative is, of course, an extremist alternative that promises you security. You have to give up some things, rule of law maybe a little bit, the idea that we don't discriminate. You are prepared to sacrifice to get security and again, another situation. Second reaction is, of course, who is to blame? Why is there decline? Why is there insecurity? And you start blaming, of course, the people with another background because they are new in town. So they cause the problem. That's their fault. So you open the window for that, for racism, for wrong ideas about other people.
May I just ask you, in Sweden, I would think most people see these young gangs that you described. Yeah. They are, I'd say, dominated by people with an immigrant background.
Oh, of course.
Was that the same in Mechelen?
Yeah, you could say there was exactly the same. The people, often with a migrant background, who were very visible, because that's something you see it more than you see your own. If I may use that little bit wrong expression, it's often because it's unknown. If you see, let's say, a Flemish guy, a youngster hanging around, you recognize yourself in it. It's easier for you to have empathy for it, or at least you think you are more able to control it, to respond to it, to talk in the language they use. And I'm not speaking about language as Dutch or Swedish, but the way to act.
Don't you think that's maybe somewhat true, that it is easier to communicate with people that resembles yourself and you can connect with them in another way? I don't know.
Of course, it's of course like that, because certainly if you live in a segregated society, that's the point I always try to make, that's one of the issues we have to tackle. But the third thing is that Let's make my point. So you are angry on politicians, you're angry on the other ones, the migrants. And the third thing, what you do is you don't want to engage yourself anymore for the place you live in. You go at home, you lock your door, you stay inside, you are not ready to work in a cultural way or a social way to do something with your city. You don't trust people anymore, you are afraid of people, and you get isolated. You isolate yourself in a time of social media. That's a very dangerous thing, because the only window you have is social media. And in social media, it works radicalizing. because you only things you see are things that emphasizes your fears, and you get in a bubble, and it's always the most radical voice, the most extreme voice, the most negative voice that gets the most likes. So you see when you're scrolling on your social media, you always see small incidents, but it's on tube and it's very confronting, and you get more angry and more afraid. So that's a process. If you are isolated, we saw it in COVID times, people get open for extremist ideas, for all those strange stories and theories, because you are closed up and you don't have. If you have a contact every day, if you go to a pub, you go to your family, you meet people at work, in the on the marketplace, you get other stories, you get a response, it gets more nuances. It's like in a pub. If you are sitting in a pub, you say, oh, all those people, those migrants, they are crazy. Some will say, yeah, they are a danger, but others say, what are you saying? So there's social control, social reaction, and it gets more moderate. But if you're isolated, you radicalize.
Ja, Bart Sommers beskriver alltså läget i Mechelen på sent 1990-tal som en stad med stora problem. En migration som i invånarnas ögon mest fört med sig problem och osäkerhet, en växande rasism och radikalisering där det högerextrema partiet Vlaams Belang var stadens största med omkring en tredjedel av väljarstödet. Sättet han beskriver Mechelen för 20 år sedan på påminner om hur många idag uppfattar flera svenska städer. Så frågan blir då, vad gjorde Bart Sommers när han som borgmästare fick chansen? Ja, det första han valde att adressera var säkerheten, såväl den faktiska som människors upplevelse av den.
First of all, I was very convinced that I have to invest in a feeling of security and in a clean and safe city. A city that respects you, a public domain that respects you as a citizen, that you can walk around, you can feel safe. I thought that the rule of law was a very important first step to create confidence again and trust between local government and citizens.
And how did you achieve that? Because that's easier said than done, would many people argue.
Yeah, not only in the... Because some people would say that's a right-wing response. So because my policy was a mixture of let's say, traditional right-wing or left-wing observed measures. But also there in security, for me, it was very important first invested in police, police cameras, police on the street. Sometimes in neighborhoods where it was difficult, zero tolerance, don't accepting anything. Show them that the government is in control and asks from you to respect it. I invested in a closed youth center. I paid it for the federal government. I said, I cannot accept that you say we don't have place enough to put them in jail when it's necessary. Okay, I will fund it towards the federal government to do it, because we don't help people with just saying, okay, you have done wrong things, you have done crimes, but we don't have a place to take care of you, so you walk on. So that's the first thing. But second, also I invested a lot in prevention, in social work, youth work. I strongly believe in it. I try to mobilize through programs youngsters to help to make Mechelen a nicer place to live in. For example, during holidays, youngsters could get a job for a few weeks, a holiday job, you could say. And what was their job? They were the big brother or big sister. That was the ID. 17, 18 years old. And they were on a playground in the middle of the city, basketball, for example, playground. And their job was to keep a little bit an eye on the younger ones. And they don't break it down. It's your playground at 10 o'clock in the evening. Let's be quiet a little bit. People have to sleep. They have to work tomorrow. There are small kids. Don't be aggressive to people who walk by. Behave. In fact, that. And they did it. And a lot of them said, for me, it was the first time that I got a responsibility to take care of things like that, that I could identify myself with those rules. I understood then, only then at that moment, that those rules are important. And the youngsters who are playing there, they didn't see a policeman, a white policeman. They saw somebody with the same background, because it were often people with a migrant background, who was a little bit older, maybe the nephew, the guy living next door, who was, in the name of the city, talking about rules, they have a little bit control on it. Of course, if things went completely wrong, police had to come. But the normal social control, it was restored a little bit with that. The second thing we did was, for example, that we asked parents in a neighborhood where youngsters were also creating problems, not real gangs, but starting, because I believe a little bit in the stepping stone. If you have a society that allows that and so on, and there is no rule of law anymore, everybody does what he wants, then certain vulnerable kids get the wrong, let's say, role models. You see the drug dealer with a beautiful car, doesn't work, hangs around, has weapons. He's the negative role model, and nobody has control about it. So we asked a neighbor, fathers, say, you have to go on the street during the evening. You have a job as a parent to take care of your kids when they are 16, 17 years old. It's your job to do it. So what we did, we provided them a small place where they could have a tea. But the idea was, you go on the street, because if you don't do it, I will have to come with the police. And then there will be severe sanctions, and it would be very bad for the future of your kid that police has to take them in and maybe put them before court and so on. So parents did that for 3-4 months, and the climate in that neighborhood changed.
Was it easy to get the parents to do that?
The authority of a mayor who said, if we want to have a better city, we all have to do our job. So that's the idea of prevention and also mobilizing the city. Security is a task for everybody. That's my idea. Everybody has to help to build a better city. So, and if you speak about gangs, for example, what we did, the top 10 of those guys who went to court, get punished, came out of court, started again, you know, we call it like a turning door criminals. What did we do? We, together with the Office of Justice, we the top 10 or top 20, they got a dedicated policeman. We called it a kind of uncle. They had to come to them, and the deal was, we are going to help you to get back on track. We are going to help you to find a job, to back maybe find a school again. But if you do even the smallest thing wrong, immediately we bring you to court. Zero tolerance for everything you do. And we make a clear contracts in our minds together, what you can do, what you can't do. For example, you cannot see those friends anymore. And the whole of the police corps of Mechelen, 400 policemen, they knew the top 10. They knew those 10. And every time they saw them, it was a very strict control. And every week they had to come to the uncle policeman to report. And then he said, yeah, you have done a good job. We have no complaints. Or we saw that you were again with your bad friends. And how is it at school and in your work? So it was a kind of, let's say, special treatment. We call it very irritating policing, VIP treatment, very irritating policing, to get, again, a grip on them. Another element, what we did was, if you were convicted as a youngster, you came in that jail we built, it, a closed youth environment, and we used a method that comes out of the UK and the Netherlands. That is that if you are sitting there, we also involve your parents, because our idea is if you sit there for 6 months or a year and you come out in the same environment, the same relations, it won't help. So we try to work together with the family, together with you, to bring you back on track. First of all, moral insight, that you again know what's good and wrong. And then with the family, pedagogically, looking for what can we do, how can we support to help them and give them back a better future. So a lot of programs, some successful, others not successful, some for years, others for a few months, but always again looking for solutions. I give maybe a very special one was, we have a cavalry in the police. And of course, if there are big manifestations and so, the horses also come. We made the same in Sweden. But if there are no manifestations, those horses have to drive around. So they went to the woods around Brussels to drive with those horses. And I said, because I needed more policemen, I said, no, you can come to Mechelen and do it in the shopping street to be more visible. And in the beginning, they said, now he's getting crazy, that mayor. But it had a very positive effect, because it's not aggressive. People think it's they're driving small. Kids see a horse in the street, but you see also a policeman sitting there. And the presence of police was very clear.
So riding police in the city center?
Yeah, yeah.
Every day?
No, it was, again, it was 2 years long, every Saturday, every Wednesday, 2-3 times a week. We had even a cell phone, because if those horses shit on the street, we had to clean it. We had a special number that they could call that our services came. No, but it brought more blue in the street, more police.
Ja, under Bart Sommers första år av styre var prio ett i Mechelen alltså att skapa vad han kallar en ren och säker stad. Han nämnde, som ni hörde, flera olika exempel på åtgärder som vidtogs. Allt från att punktmarkera de 10-20 mest notoriska kriminella som tvingades rapportera till sina personliga poliser varje vecka och som hela poliskåren höll ordentlig koll på. Till att kommendera ut ridande polis i stadens centrum för att, som man säger, skapa mer blott än tydligare polisnärvaro i gatubilden. Men samtidigt var en viktig målsättning att också skapa en medborgaranda som omfattade alla i Mechelen. Därför satsade stan också mycket på det. Där en del handlade om mer positiva brotts- och segregationsförebyggande åtgärder. Framförallt riktade mot ungdomar, berättar Bart Sommers.
We also invested a lot in positive things because we didn't want to create a climate that we were, let's say, creating a lot of instruments to control people with a migrant background. There were no second class and first class citizens. For me, it was important everybody is citizen of Mechelen, and it's a project we do together. For example, another thing we did was in social neighborhoods, a small percentage of the houses we rented it not to people who had a small income, but for people that maybe an income that's a little bit too high to get a social house. For example, young people who have studied for a teacher, they could rent a house for 3 years at a low price, but they had to do voluntary work or civil servant work 10 hours a week, helping kids with their homework, explaining to people what to do with my garbage, organizing a social neighborhood in a barbecue to bring people together, giving lessons to learn the language, to bring in, because our social neighborhoods, if we have them, 10% of our houses are social houses, but it's always to the, let's say, the most vulnerable groups. So you get a kind of ghetto atmosphere there, and nobody is working, often people with a migrant background. So we said, if we give 3% of the houses to people, they do voluntary work, so it's cheap for us as a city. And we have young people who are much often very motivated to do something for society. We look a little bit to what did they study, and they could also create more social strength in empowerment in those neighborhoods.
It seems like you've been very creative. Where did you get all these ideas from, and were they always research-based, or did you sometimes just improvise?
We sometimes improvised, sometimes good mayors steal. We looked around, said that's an idea, we have to try it. Sometimes it was...
CSRD. Ännu en förkortning som väcker känslor hos företagare. Men lugn, våra rådgivare här på PwC har koll på det som din verksamhet berörs av. Från hållbarhetslösningar och nya regelverk till affärsutveckling och ansvarsfulla AI-strategier. Välkommen till PwC.
Hej, Synoptik här. Visste du att solens UV-strålar kan vara skadliga och åldra dina ögon i förtid? Kom in till oss så hjälper vi dig att hitta rätt solglasögon som skyddar dina ögon. Välkommen till Synoptik.
Nu är det stor vårfest på K-bygg med massor av varor till kanonpriser. Eller vad sägs om Bäckers elitträolja för bara 229 kronor. Ytterdörr Modern för bara 5 995, eller 25% rabatt på förvaring och skjutdörrar från Elfa.
K-bygg.
Bygghandeln med stort K.
It was a big failure. Some things worked, but it's indeed we're very creative, very dynamic, out of the box thinking. But one of the important things we also did, that you may not underestimate, that's one of the obsessions we have. We want to break down segregation, because you cannot have a real, let's say, trust in society. We wanted to create citizenship. You know, it's my conviction that if you feel citizen of a city or a society, You can be angry. You can be, you want to make it better. You see things that go wrong still. But if you really can identify yourself with the society, you are part of it, and you want also to help that. You will not attack it. You will not break it down. And the more people that think like that, the stronger we are. Eh? We have seen that also at the moment with the radicalization processes to the Middle East, that we were very strong in defending our own.
Yeah, I read that nobody from Mechelen went, and you have a Muslim minority of 20% or something like that, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Belgium as a whole had a lot of people going to ISIS and radicalized, but Mechelen, zero.
Zero, yeah. To give you a few figures, Antwerp only 25 kilometers away, 100. Brussels only 25 kilometers away to the south, 200. A small town, Vilvoorde, it's only 8 kilometers away, half of Mechelen, 27. And out of Mechelen, nobody. So everybody said, how was it possible? And it has to do with trust. If people identify themselves with I'm part of a city that respects me, where I'm not a second-class citizen, but I'm part of it, and it's my town, it's my society, then it's much easier to get in a very early stage signals from a father, a neighbor, a school teacher, out of a sports club. Yeah, that guy, Mohammed, is has weird ideas, is fascinated by ISIS, and is talking a little bit like them, so that you can, in a very early stage, can intervene, bring in people that can speak with him, can convince him that there are alternatives, that he's thinking in a kind of narrow-minded way, that he's isolating himself, so you can break it open. And that's only possible if people trust you. Otherwise, they don't come to police, they don't come to City Hall, they will not give that signal, because they know that if I give that signal, they don't see me as the enemy, they don't see that guy as the enemy, they don't will see my son as the enemy, they see my son as a citizen of Mechelen, who is maybe on the wrong path, is maybe start having weird ideas.
How do you build that trust? Because I know for a fact that the Swedish police have problems building that trust. They are often met with the stones, people throwing stones at them.
First of all, clear statement. You have to be, it's for me a narrative of 15 years continually saying we are one in diversity. And we all count. For give you an example, a symbolical one. The day after the attack on the airport of Brussels, a lot of people killed. The airport of Brussels is only 20 kilometers away from my town. A lot of citizens of Mechelen work there. The day after, the people came together in the biggest mosque of Mechelen. It was Friday. And you have to know that's more than 1,500 people. And they were afraid because they said, what will be the reaction of society against Muslims now? People will be angry. Extremely said, will there be a kind of attack on us, a kind of razzia against us? What will be the reaction? So people are really afraid. I went to the mosque. I'm not a Muslim, so it was extraordinary. The mayor came. I asked to the imam, can I speak first? And I came there and I said, listen, the attack of yesterday, we are all victims and you are two times victims. Because you're a victim like everybody, afraid of getting killed by bombs. But secondly, you're a victim because you're a Muslim, because those terrorists abuse your religion and they use it to defend their terroristic activities. So I am on your side because you're a citizen of Mechelen and I will not allow that anybody touches you.
What was the reaction from the Muslim community?
You can imagine it was a very emotional moment. People cried even. I was also moved by it, because then you feel what you say. Even now, when I think about it, I get emotional about it. That creates a bond. That are symbolical moments. For example, the evening itself on national television, every politician that came to express their feelings. And of course, it starts, you know, by condemning, but later on, it becomes more and more radical because every politician says, I have to say something stronger. And at a certain moment, you start speaking about we and them. The Muslims are the problem. So, and they also asked me, and in our youth center were, let's say, the testosterone guys, the problem maker, not the real criminals, but, you know, the not easy guys, looking to the television, and they, all the time they hear, you are a sponsor, you are a problem. And I came, I didn't know that they were sitting there, and on television, and I said, okay, what happened is horrible. The people who did it has to be brought to court. They are terrorists, but they are our terrorists. Citizens of our society, born and raised, it's our problem. Those guys became very sentimental about it because it was the only politician that even at the most difficult moment said, we are one. We are one. Even then, we are one. And that's not really an important thing. One year at one of the biggest monuments of Mechelen, 1 year long, I put 120 big photographs of 120 citizens of Mechelen, all with another national background. We have more than to say that's who we are. That's who we are. So I always try to explain that it's our strength, and the results are there. If you see that today, Mechelen is one of the safest cities. Trust in society has grown enormously. It's one of the highest of Belgium. We measured that. It's a kind of monitor system. We are the cleanest city of Belgium, they say. Yeah, that's also a consumer magazine that examines it every 5 years. So we were the dirtiest, now the cleanest. So it's a complete makeover.
Enligt Bart Sommers lyckades Mechelen alltså förvandla mångfalden från ett problem till en styrka. Och att skapa en medborgaranda som omfattade alla var en mycket målmedveten satsning som såväl genomsyrade hur den politiska ledningen pratade som vad den gjorde. När stan högtidlighöll 50-årsminnet av de första migranterna till Mechelen sattes ett 100-tal porträtt av stadens medborgare upp i centrum, där varje porträtt representerade någon av de över 100 nationella ursprung som invånarna i Mechelen har. Men även om symboliska gester kan vara nog så viktiga har ett av de viktigaste konkreta målen varit att bekämpa segregation. Och precis som i Sverige handlar det om var människor bor, men kanske ännu mer om skolorna.
People say you cannot do anything about it. It's a natural thing. I said no, I want to change it. I created an organization, School Insight. It brought people from middle class families 10 together. 15, and they all sent their kids to schools a little bit farther away because the school around the corner was full of migrants. We call it a concentration school, the school with a high concentration of migrants. And I said to them, if you speak with them, they always have two arguments. One, they say, I'm an open-minded person, but my kid is not an experiment. And if they go to that school, they will feel a little bit like a black swan, the only white kid in a school, a classroom full of migrants. And secondly, the quality of the school will be lower because the parents don't speak Dutch, they cannot read the agenda, they don't know our school system, they have another relation with their kids, so the school will lose in quality. And I want the best for my kids, sorry. What did we do? We say, if you come with 15 together, at the same, your kid will not be the only one in the classroom. You will be 4 and 5. And we guarantee together with the school that the quality of the school will be higher because it's true. They are in a spiral. For example, they don't go to museum anymore because see, that's always a problem going outside school, boys, girls, Muslim, difficult. Mm-hmm. They are not interested in it. So it's a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy. Because no, the quality has to be higher. And it takes time. You have to visit a school, come back, do it again. But one civil servant who did it, and after 4 years, out of my mind, 230 families changed their kids from one school to another. 4 concentration schools were broken open.
Because the schools were so good, or what?
No, because we invested so much energy in convincing parents, showed it to the rest of the city. Look, that's the example. We helped the school. Parents were, they understood, yeah, it's maybe better for my kids to live in the reality of today. And the quality of the school was good. My kid was not alone in the classroom because 5 other white kids went together with them. So out of 20, they were with 5 or with 6. So it was a kind of more comfortable situation. We did the same with youth organizations, scouting. We did the same with sport clubs.
When it comes to the living standards, housing, that kind of segregation, did you do anything on that too?
Yeah, we invested in our most vulnerable neighborhoods. We created clean streets, better streets. Sometimes we had to hang 5 cameras to a park because we didn't allow that it was dirty, but used the same materials as, let's say, in the city center. at the most beautiful place. We didn't want to make a basketball, you know, so out of metal, vandalism-proof materials. No, the best quality. And what do you see then? Yeah, of course, we are very attractive as a city at the moment. Young middle-class people come to those neighborhoods, come to live there, buy a house, renovate it, and the neighborhood gets more mixed. And the people who live there in those, let's say, bad neighborhoods, cheap houses, a lot of people with a migrant background had not the capital to buy a beautiful house somewhere else, so they bought their houses. And now they see a clean street, a park around the corner, a playground. Their house in value doubles. They are very happy. And you get newcomers coming in. At the moment, we have no ghetto areas anymore.
This sounds almost like a fairy tale because it's a lot of cities in Sweden struggling with this. What were the main obstacles? It can't have been a straightforward road. You must have had problems.
No, it's a work of years. The most prejudices, the feeling it can't be done. Also, a mentality of administration that you don't have to make reports behind your desk, but you have to go on the street, ring at doors. If you want to get a youngster in a sports club with a Moroccan background getting in scouting, it doesn't come because his parents haven't been in scouting. They don't know it. They look at it. They ask themselves, what's there with boys and girls? What do they eat? What do they drink? So it's they don't know it. My kids went there because I was in scouting and I said, wow, it's. So what you need bridging figures. You have to ring on the door. You have to have a Moroccan guy with you explaining to them that he is in scouting with his kids. And it's fun and it's important. And you have to do it. So it takes a lot of energy. But it gets also results. You get a lot of things back, and at a certain moment, we sometimes see ourselves as a kind of, you know, is everywhere it's a problem, but we can. We show the rest of the world that it is possible. You get a kind of proudness. It's a kind of city culture you create. We had a very negative city culture. They said it were complainers, negative people, but there was a reason enough to complain. Today, it's more a kind of proudness about sometimes older people come to me and they say to me, Mayor, we really can integrate very well, can't we? Maybe they haven't done anything, but in their mind, it has become not something negative, something positive. To give you a last example, with the refugee crisis in 2015, our federal government didn't know where can we put refugees. Every local community said, every mayor said, we don't want it. We have problems enough. I said, we ask it, we demand it. Because it's who we are, it's our DNA.
Ja, när hela Belgien skruvade på sig inför flyktingströmmen hävdar Bart Sommers att han och Mechelens vägnar inte bara tog på sig att ta emot migranterna, utan att han krävde det. Men även för en så stark mångfaldsförespråkare som Bart Sommers finns det väl ändå gränser. Områden och värderingar som ett öppet och liberalt samhälle aldrig kan kompromissa om.
Of course, our fundamental we often speak about values, but in fact, they are our fundamental rights. Because I believe I'm a lawyer. I believe you fundamental right: the division of power, the freedom of speech, the freedom of religion, being part of religion, but also have the right to step out of religion, the equality of men and women, things like that. Because by defending that. By defending the freedom of other people, you defend your own. And by defending your own, you defend freedom as such. If you don't do that, you can never have a good working diversity. You need those fundamental values. Those are, for me, non-negotiable. And besides that, I also promote things. For example, I promote getting away from segregation. I cannot forbid you to organize yourself on an ethnic-cultural basis. If you want to create a sport club with only, let's say, Afghani people, it's allowed in our society. But the question is, do I, as a government, have to subsidize it, have to promote it? Or do I, as a government, can choose that I only promote and subsidize those organizations that bring people with a different background together?
Mm. So,
give you a second example.
Would it be allowed to create a football club for Belgians or Flander people only, Flemish people only?
In fact, you can. You can. There's freedom of organization. That's a part of our society. But do I have to be happy with it? Do I have to promote it? Do I have to give taxpayers money on it? The third question can be very firmly, no, I don't. And I do the other side around. I promote. And I don't believe in, you know, the naive, sometimes progressive way. I see myself also as a progressive politician, but the naive way is that they say, yeah, but we bring communities together. And then it's often the imam with the priest after a big incident, who a kind of ceremony. But that's not the fighting segregation. That is, in fact, installing segregation. Because if you speak with community leaders, who has chosen them? Who has defined the community? What does that mean? And often those leaders, they want to be an interface between the local government or the national government and a community, because then they become very important. And they define what they need. I saw it in my town, for example. We have a lot of Assyrians. At a certain moment, the leader of the Assyrian community came to me and said, we need a community place because we want to keep on our learning our traditional dances and so on. But if I spoke with a lot of young people out of the Assyrian community, they were not interested in that. They wanted to have a job. They wanted to be part of our society. So I distrust community leaders. I also made a mistake in the beginning. I went to the imam at a certain moment. There were youngsters with a Moroccan background who were creating problems. And I went to the imam, and he was a very polite and a nice guy. He was delighted that he could speak with me. I asked him, help me, please. He said, I will do it in our mosque on Friday. And he had a speech. Saying that a good Muslim doesn't act bad on the streets, respects his neighbors, because Surah number so on and so on says in the Quran that you have to do it like that. And it had an impact. But a month later, I asked him, can't you do the same to convince parents that if their daughters have a lot of capacities to study, that you have to allow it and support it? And he was very polite. He said, yes, I will do it. He has never done it.
Okay.
And then I said, that's wrong, because I give a big legitimation to him, because he sat in the mosque. The mayor asked me, so it became more important. He used it. And secondly, it's not a good thing. I don't have to speak with people as a Muslim. I have to speak to them as a citizen of Mechelen. I may not say a good Muslim has to behave. No, a good citizen has to behave.
To be this consistent that you've been, and you really believe in this, why did you become that kind of politician? What's your belief when it comes to diversity and multiculturalism and things like that?
Two very personal things, to be honest. I'm a liberal, and I believe in individualism. I don't believe that in identitarian thinking, because I see it as a prison. We start building the prison around the other ones. We say that's a Moroccan or a Muslim, so yes, he acts like this. That's his personality. That's his characteristics. That's his culture, and we define it. And he's put in a box. But of course, we start putting ourselves also in the box. Extreme right is also speaking about good Flemish guys and bad Flemish guys, because they give a norm, and that attacks my freedom. So as a liberal, I believe in individualism. I have a lot of identities, but I want to define them for myself. And secondly, those identitarian thinkers also try to kill freedom by making every change in society suspicious. They say our traditions are very vulnerable. But if you say that, then every change is a threat. And the strength of a Western society, of our fundamental Western European society, is change, because the freedom we discuss. And I often give the example of the group that changes our traditions the most are women, because they said we also want to be on the labor market. We want not to do all the homework. We want to vote. And that was against traditions. And at that time, people also reasoned zero sum. If women go to work, they take the jobs of men. If women voted, we cannot decide anymore. Exactly this. You see it all the time. It was with gay people. It was with people with disabilities. It was with... And now, of course, the new group that is attacked are the newcomers. Exactly the same. And the newcomers say, yeah, we are not against your society, but we want an equal place. We say, yeah, but you it's threatening us. You steal our job. You steal our houses. Exactly the same as we saw all the time. So we say we won't change it. Even traditions, the Santa Claus discussion in my country or whatever. And we forget that traditions change all the time. They are always renewed and adapted to new situations. So that's one. Second thing is I am born and raised citizen of Mechelen. I saw the problems. I saw the difficulties when I was young. I am very proud of my town, like everybody is proud of his town. It's an historical, beautiful city, but it was in decline. And I said, I have to try to do something about it. And the third, the most personal thing is that that's a very personal one. That's in the Second World War. My family was on the wrong side. They collaborated like a lot of people in Flanders did because they were not happy with Belgium. And you see that at a certain moment you get in a kind of radicalization process and you start speaking about we and them. At that time it was against Jews and so on. So my lesson for that, I'm two generations later. My father was a young guy, was born in 36, so he has nothing to do with it. But my lesson from that, a lesson I got also from my family, is we may never make that mistake again. So that motivates me very strongly by trying to walk on the humanist path, but not never on a naive way, because naivety doesn't help us.
Bart Somers, Vice Minister of the Region of the Flanders, thank you so much for taking part in the Friday interview.
It was an honor for me.
Nej. Dåliga vibrationer är att gå utan byxor till jobbet. Bra vibrationer är när du inser att mobilen är i bröstfickan. Alla abonnemang för 20 kronor i månaden i 4 månader. Vimla, mobiloperatören med bra vibrationer.
Sista dagarna nu på vårens stora season sale. Passa på att göra sommarfint hemma, både inne och ute. Och fynda till fantastiska priser. Måndagen den 6 maj avslutar vi med kvällsöppet i 21. Välkommen till Mio.
Ni är med om det största. Och det största är den minsta. Ni minns de första ögonblicken. Och den där blicken gör er starkare. Så starka att ni är ömtåliga. Men hittar trygghet i Sveriges populäraste barnförsäkring. Trygg Hansa. Trygghet för livet.